national consumer health advocacy organization called Community Catalyst. We're based here in Boston, and we work supporting consumer health advocates in 40 states and also at the federal level. After I present, I'll call up Stephanie Geller, who is a policy analyst at Rhode Island Kids Count, which is a statewide multi-issue children's policy organization where she's responsible for policy analysis, research, and writing on a variety of issues affecting the well-being of children, including education, poverty, family economic security, housing, and homelessness. She has a Bachelor of Arts from Wellesley College and a Master's in Education from the Harvard School of Graduate School of Education. And then after Stephanie presents, Stephen Ray will go next. He's Executive Director of the Economy League of Greater Philadelphia, and he works with a board of more than 70 senior private sector leaders from the region's leading companies and institutions. Excuse me. Ray is also Managing Director of the Pennsylvania Economy League, Inc., the corporate home of the Economy League, and prior to being at the Economy League, Stephen served as Policy Director for Pennsylvania Lieutenant Governor Mark Sengel. Then Diane Castelbuono will present. She's a vice president of the United Way of Greater Philadelphia and Southern New Jersey and leads their impact agenda in education, income, and health in the region. Prior to joining the United Way, Diane spent 20 years working in the education sector in a variety of leadership positions. She was the associate superintendent for strategic programs for the School District of Philadelphia and served for 5 years as the state commissioner for elementary and secondary education for Pennsylvania. Diane has an undergraduate degree from Haverford College and an MBA from Eastern University. Following Diane is Donna Cooper, who is the Executive Director of Public Citizens for Children and Youth in Philadelphia. She was previously a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress and served for 8 years as Secretary of Policy and Planning for the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania and 3 years as Deputy Mayor for Policy and Planning for Philadelphia. Donna has a master's degree in government administration from the University of Pennsylvania, Fell Center of Government, as well as a master's degree in intercultural management from the School for International Training. And then we will hear from Dr. Kimberly Dawn Wisdom, who has practiced for 20 years as an emergency medicine physician at Henry Ford Health System in Detroit, where she now serves as a senior vice president of community health and equity and chief wellness officer. In 2003, she was appointed as Michigan's and the nation's first state-level Surgeon General. And in 2012, Dr. Wisdom was appointed by President Obama to serve on the Advisory Group on Prevention, Health Promotion, and Integrative and Public Health. And then our final speaker will be Jay Clement, who is the Director of Community Health Programs and Strategies with the Office of Community Health, Equity, and Wellness at the Henry Ford Health System in Detroit, Michigan. In this role, Jay staffs the Detroit Regional Infant Mortality Reduction Task Force and holds administrative oversight for their Women-Inspired Neighborhood Network Detroit program. Jay earned her MPH from the University of Michigan School of Public Health and her MPP from the Gerald R. Ford School of Public Policy, both in 2005. So again, terrific speakers, and we have a tremendous amount of great information for all of you. So to get things started, I just need to disclose that I have no disclosures. I'm sure you guys have all gotten used to hearing that at the beginning of every session. And I want to just take a brief moment about the importance of multi-sector coalitions to the work of public health. Now, given the fact that you've chosen to spend this session with us, I'm going to make a huge assumption that you're all very open to this idea already. But it struck me as I looked at this recent report from the Prevention Institute that this is a concept that's really gaining momentum within public health, and so we think it's a very relevant topic to the conversation today. I just wanted to provide this graphic, which was in the report that they just issued from the Prevention Institute, called Towards a 21st Century Approach, Advancing a Vision for Prevention and Public Health, because the four purple boxes on the left of the arrow talk about the specific groups that public health should be working to engage. Included in here are community institutions and leaders, healthcare, grassroots, and the business community. Now, while that's, you know, public health folks telling other public health folks about the need for multi-sector coalitions, I'm going to come at this topic from the from an advocacy perspective. So Community Catalyst, as I mentioned earlier, is a national organization focused on consumer health advocacy. We've worked in 40 different states as well as at the federal level, really engaging consumers in the decisions that affect health and the healthcare system. We've done a lot of work on federal issues, and we've really begun doing a lot of work over the last few years in the public health arena, focused on the social and economic factors of health as part of the County Health Rankings and Roadmaps program, and in particular, the Roadmaps to Health Community Grants. Now, hopefully many of you are familiar with the County Health Rankings and Roadmaps effort, but if not, I wanted to provide just a minute's worth of background, in part because a couple of the presenters who will be talking today are part of the Roadmaps to Health Community Grant Program, but also because I think this is a national effort that really emphasizes the importance of multi-sector coalitions. So as you may be aware, the County Health Rankings is a really accessible call to action and data set that are issued annually by the University of Wisconsin Population Health Institute with the support from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. But alongside the County Health Rankings is a series of activities called the County Health Roadmaps, of which the Roadmaps to Health Community Grants is a part, that is really intended to provide a variety of supports and assistance to communities that want to take action. So the basic premise is the rankings let communities understand what's affecting the health of their community, and the roadmaps are a place where they can go to get some help figuring out how to take action and how to address the things that are of largest concern. The model for the County Health Rankings is on the screen, and the Roadmaps to Health Community Grants are particularly focused on the social and economic factors within the model, because the model indicates that they represent 40% of what influences the health of a community. And so our grantees come to us as multi-sector coalitions that are focused on one of those four social or economic factors. And we have, in two rounds of grant making, awarded funding to 30 different coalitions in 23 different states. The map just kind of gives you a sense of where they are, and in addition to the geographic diversity that's represented, the grantees themselves are very diverse. As I mentioned before, really we're funding multi-sector coalitions, so that's something that they all have in common, but beyond that, they're working on policy or system-level change, and they could be doing it at an organizational level, at a city, county, or state level. Most often, they're led by organizations that are not public health agencies, although we do have three grantees that are either a city or county public health agency. And then, as I mentioned before, they're focused on one of those four factors, whether it's education, income or employment, community safety, or family or social support. Now, there's lots of conversation and lots of attention being paid to the importance of taking action. And this model, which comes from the University of Wisconsin Population Health Institute, which talks about the need and the ways that communities should be taking action, we think is particularly helpful because the purple circles in the center really represent a multi-sectoral coalition. And this, the virtuous cycle around it, really spells out the kinds of actions and the sequence of actions that are helpful in trying to create change. Now, coming from the advocacy perspective, what I want to be able to share is the how and the what a coalition does in order to develop its power and its influence to be able to pursue this kind of action and to really be effective in creating change. Now, from the advocacy perspective, we've done our work over many years with coalitions all over the country that are looking to affect something to do with health or healthcare. And over the years, we've developed an expertise on how to support those communities and how to work with those coalitions, which we have begun to coalesce into this diagram, which essentially is our system of advocacy. It's a model that really emphasizes how to go from identifying a priority or an opportunity and then moving using various modes of activity to make sure that you're creating the policy change that you want to see come about. The green boxes, which I'm sure are hard to read from where you are, really spell out the different areas of capacity that we have found are most essential for a coalition to be able to have the effect that it wants to have. And I'll go into more depth about this in a moment. But ours is not the only model like this. There are several others out there. We have also been using with the grantees a model that comes from M&R Strategic Services, which we think is also very powerful and has a whole suite of tools associated with it. It's called the Power Prism, and here it's arrayed as a constellation of prisms that are aligning power to create change at the core. And we've again looked at this model and our model to really think about how we work with the grantees and their coalitions in order to help them be effective at making change. What we've done on this graphic is just do a crosswalk so that you can see the overlap of the categories. There's a lot of overlap. You know, advocates are not creating this all from scratch. We've learned over the years how to make change happen, and we understand the moving parts that are required in order to be effective advocates. And so what we've done for our grantees is really distill out these two different models into eight capacities that we think are essential for the capacity to be able to make change. Make it a little bit easier to read. These are the eight capacities listed out individually, and on the bottom is a link to our website at communitycatalyst.org, where you can actually read up on each of the eight and access tools that are free and available to anyone who wants to use them that can help coalitions, leaders in the community, figure out exactly how to begin incorporating these areas of effort into their work. Very briefly stated, these hopefully are not remarkably new or the first time you've heard this, but coalitions need to really be able to do some research and analysis about policy precedents, utilize data, really become authoritative on the topic in which they're trying to influence. They need to learn how to communicate, work with the media effectively, both to frame their issues and the solutions that they're putting forth, but also to make sure that people understand the importance of this, of the effort, the issue that they're working on and the efforts that they're undertaking. You know, the ability to develop and implement a policy campaign needs to be taken on as a specific activity. Policy change isn't something that necessarily happens by random. There's a series of steps, a series of decision makers that need to be thought of in the work. So we've broken that out as a specific capacity. Engaging grassroots support is essential. From our perspective, the power that a coalition wields when it can learn from and also develop the leadership ability of folks in the community, in particular the folks who are either affected or need the change to happen, is one that pays dividends not only in pursuing the policy change but then in implementation should you be successful. Coalition building and maintenance is also not a random set of activities. Coalition work is difficult work to do. It's not the easiest way to go about asking for people to do things differently, but it can have a tremendous amount of power and an incredible amount of influence if done effectively. Generating resources, not a surprise. We need funding, but we also need in-kind supports, contributions from all members of your coalition in order to be effective. And then influencing specific decision makers is, again, a discrete activity that really needs to be thought of concretely as steps moving your issue forward. And then finally, telling your story is something that we've emphasized with the grantees and with all of our coalition partners, because we know that they have a lot to teach to members of their community, but also to other communities that want to take action as well. Now, while these are listed as separate activities, and sometimes I refer to them as concrete, discrete activities that need to be intentional, in terms of your approach, they have a tremendous amount of overlap. And there's not one day you're going to work on one of these. You're going to work on all eight of these interchangeably over the course of the coalition-based work. But the important thing to remember is that there are efforts required in all of these areas. And you'll hear from the speakers who will come after me talk about ways that they've done some of this work, which came up through their coalition's work in a much more natural way. Now, while the framework is hopefully helpful and may be helpful to you as you listen to the following speakers, what I wanted to do is just give you a couple of very brief examples from the work of our grantees to kind of reinforce the fact that this is something that needs public health involvement and actually can have a tremendous amount of impact because it's already happening all around us. One of our grantees that is a public health agency is the Manchester, New Hampshire City Health Department, and they've been working to establish community schools to address issues of violence in some of their neighborhoods. One of the kind of reasons I thought to include this example is that they didn't go out and create their own coalition. They actually utilized the Weed and Seed Coalition that had been funded by the Department of Justice, pre-existed. They were already part of it, but they realized that this coalition had the relationships and the power that they needed in order to move it forward. So they were able to tap into and get buy-in from coalition partners that included the chief of police, the mayor, the superintendent of schools, as well as the leader of the public health agency, and then neighborhood alliances that had already been working on issues and were poised to kind of understand the impact that community schools could have on the issues that they were all concerned about. And then even more briefly, some additional examples. These are taken from work of our education-focused grantees. These multi-sector coalitions have had amazing results in a very short time frame. $1 billion has been leveraged for school reconstruction in Baltimore in just the last year of work of one of our grantees. A public health agency in Shasta County has worked with the school department and local area colleges to really promote college attendance and educational attainment and has been able to secure admissions agreements with the local colleges. And then in Salt Lake City, a United Way there that's a grantee has been able to actually leverage the first of its kind social impact bond fund working with private investors so that they would be much more supportive of quality early childhood education and understand the return on investments that are available to the community from that type of work. And then a couple of other examples from outside of education, if I can get the slide to advance. In New York City, a grantee was able to bring forth paid sick days policy which withstood a mayoral veto, which again, just a testament to the power of the coalition that was developed in New York City. And then in Richmond, California, Minnesota, and Wisconsin, we've seen incredible advances in the support and resources being allocated to folks who are formerly incarcerated to give them opportunities to come back into the community and become productive members. Just want to leave you with a couple of key lessons before I have Stephanie come up. Again, multi-sector coalitions are already out there and they're having an impact. They're working on things related to health, and you don't have to go far to find a coalition that is likely working on something that can benefit your goals. And public health really does have a role to play in those coalitions. It's a matter of finding out who's taking action, who's collaborating already, and having a conversation about what they want, what you want, and where is their overlap. And then finally, you don't have to struggle with how to be part of a coalition or how to make the coalition that you're a part of work better. Frameworks like ours and like the one from M&R Strategic Services are out there. They're available. And if you look for them, they oftentimes come with tools that you can use to deal with day-to-day problems and to develop the long-range vision that hopefully your coalition should have as part of its working agenda. So I'm going to stop there, and I'm going to invite Stephanie to come up.